Different cultures have different approaches to the environment, what they take from it, what they put back into it. Native American tribes are in the process of reestablishing practices and uses that existed before white settlers moved in and took over. This gets into the realm of ethnobotany, how an ethnic group used the plants around it. The Karuk tribe just opened herbaria, plant collections, on its lands in Northern California. So here we'll have a chance to find out more about the herbaria, the plants contained within, and how they have and will be used. We will start with Dr. Tom Carlson, who is a teaching professor of integrative biology at UC Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and the curator of ethnobotany at the University and Jepson Herbaria on the UC Berkeley campus. Leif and Lisa Hillman from the Karuk tribe will join us shortly, but Dr. Carlson's with us now. Thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with the real general stuff. What is an herbarium or a herbarium, and what is its value?
Well, an herbarium is a part of, like at UC Berkeley, part of the Berkeley Natural History Museums. And an herbarium is where you collect plants, you press them and dry them, and then mount them on a sheet of paper. And you have all the information on where it was collected and when. Whether its associates in the ecosystem was growing in, and then that specimen can last for hundreds of years. So what it is documentation of what plant or plants was in a certain area at a given time. And the good news is that once you dry these plants, they can literally last for hundreds of years.
Well, so it's meant for identification and display. I mean, this isn't a seed bank in that sense, right?
Right. Well, there's different uses of these. Typically, they're used for scientific purposes. For instance, you can go back in the UC Berkeley Herbarium, which has the largest collection of California plants of any herbarium, and you can find specimens from a couple of hundred years ago. And so you could go back to that same ecosystem to see if those same species are there. So it can be something that can help you go back in time and historically look at how species complexes may have changed in a certain area.
I was going to ask you about that, about, you know, since these things can last for hundreds of years, if there are things that you can find in an herbarium that you can then go look at the current plant as it looks in the environment now and see differences.
Absolutely. And one of the areas that I think it's particularly important is with climate change. There have been botanical surveys done, say, 100 years ago in an area, and where the plants were collected, well preserved, and the preservation of these plants, you dry them at, in a dryer. And then what we do is a deep freeze to kill any eggs, insect eggs, and so you don't have to use any toxic chemicals. And these things can last for hundreds of years. And so what you could do is look at a botanical survey done in an ecosystem, say, 100 years ago, and then compare that to now to have ideas of what species are no longer there and what new species might be moving in.
Let me ask the cranky question. Why don't you just put them on a photographic scanner? Would you get pretty much the same sort of image?
Well, I think today many botanists will collect a voucher specimen, botanicals, sometimes they're called voucher specimens, and do a digital photograph at the same time. But to have the physical plant specimen, it's really the gold standard, okay? Because when you take a photograph of a plant, that can be useful, but to actually have the physical plant specimen is more valuable. And also, if you want to look at it very, very carefully as a botanist, you can analyze that plant much more carefully if you have a physical specimen versus simply a photograph. But photographs are wonderful additions.
Tom Carlson, how long has the herbarium concept been around, and are there some that have some very old specimens that might not even exist in nature anymore?
Well, what's very interesting is that the herbaria go back hundreds and hundreds of years. The early explorers in the New World from Europe, almost all those expeditions had botanists, and they collected plants and deposited those plants back in the European herbaria. It's very, very interesting. There were Russian explorers that came down into California, and there's a very large collection of California plants in St. Petersburg right now from the Russians who were in what is now California in the early 1800s.
Oh, certainly coming across the Pacific, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. So old.
So it's a very, and those specimens are still identifiable.
Wow, that's amazing. We will talk more about herbaria, that is the plural of herbarium, with Dr. Tom Carlson, who is teaching professor of integrative biology at the University of California, Berkeley, and is the curator of two herbaria there on campus. We will also talk to Lisa and Leif Hillman from the Karuk tribe about the opening of the Karuk herbaria in the minutes ahead. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with our guests and with your phone calls and emails in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about ethnobotany and herbaria today. An herbarium, singular, is a place where you store plants, where you take and dry and freeze plants so that they can be saved for potentially hundreds of years. The Karuk tribe recently opened more than one herbaria on its land in California, and we will be talking to members of the tribe. Lisa and Leif Hillman will join us shortly, having some troubles with the phones on their end. Dr. Tom Carlson is with us at the moment, though. He has been helping in the process. He's a teaching professor of integrative biology at the University of California, Berkeley, and the curator of ethnobotany at the University and Jepson Herbaria in Berkeley. You can join us on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Tom, we've been down the ethnobotany road a little bit lately, but can you give us the description of what it is all about?
Well, ethnobotany is how humans use plants in their surrounding ecosystems. And so typically ethnobotany relates to work with different rural indigenous cultures around the world. And what's important about ethnobotany is it recognizes that local peoples in ecosystems all over the world have tremendous knowledge about their biodiversity. And ethnobotany is specifically on their knowledge and use of their plants. So if you look at indigenous cultures around the world, including the Karuk tribe, they have names for hundreds of plants. And when you talk to elders, these elders and also Karuk tribal members of a variety of different ages, including some pretty young Karuk tribal members, there are many that are very, very knowledgeable of hundreds of different plants, and they know the Karuk names for them. And so it's very important to recognize that you don't need to get a college degree in botany to be knowledgeable in botany. And so this is one of the areas in the study of ethnobotany that are very important. Now, in the case of the food security grant ethnobotany as it relates to food is very important. And so by studying the different plants that the Karuk tribe and the Yurok tribes have historically collected in their ecosystems for foods is part of their nutritional ethnobotany.
It seems like the potential for dislocation from the natural world is great, particularly with Native American tribes, because of war and famine and removal. They end up in places where they don't know the plants. So is it often a case where you have Native American tribes attempting to regain information that in some cases has been lost?
Well, that's a very good question, and because quite a number of the California Indian tribes were put on reservations that weren't on their ancestral lands. Fortunately, the Karuk tribe still resides on their ancestral lands, and so their understanding of the plants in the broader Klamath Basin ecosystem goes back thousands of years. That isn't true with all the tribes. But even if you live in an ecosystem for thousands of years, the disruption that's happened in the last 150 years with the white settlers coming in and all the problems that emerged, there was a interruption in their connection with the ecosystem for some of the tribal members. So part of the food security grant is to contribute to the revitalization of the recognition and use of the ecosystem for different traditional foods.
Are there many plants that are unique to the range of where the Karuk people live now? I mean, are there things that are indigenous to the lower Klamath that you don't tend to find in other areas?
Well, that's a great question. And the Siskiyou ecosystem, which southern Oregon, down the Klamath Basin, is probably the most biologically diverse region in North America, north of Mexico. It's tremendously diverse in species of plants, animals, fungi, and also, if you look at the California Indian groups, tremendous diversity in languages as well. And so, yes, there are endemics to the Klamath Basin that only grow in the Klamath Basin. There are still species that Western botanists have not yet described that grow in the Klamath Basin.
Are there? I've been curious then about the collection process, though. When you begin to bring things in for an herbarium, I mean, if it's unique to your area, you want to make sure that gets into the herbarium. But then, do you chuck out stuff that's non-native or that is just really common around much of the country?
Well, you know, if you're going to do a botanical survey of an area, you would want to collect, do collections of everything that's there, so you have that documented. And certainly along roads and even trails, you will have some introduced plants that grow well in areas that are, with disturbance. And, but fortunately within the Klamath Basin ecosystem, when you get into the forest, into the ecosystems, most of the species are native. But I think it's important to also collect those plants that are non-native so you're aware they're there, because some of them are invasive weeds that outcompete the native species. And so you want to know what species they are, and then there may be some program to reduce the concentration of those invasive weeds that come in from other areas.
And so I noticed that the references to what the Karuk have created is herbaria plural. So they have more than one? Is it, there more than one location here?
Well, there's an herbarium at the People Center in Happy Camp, and also one in Orleans. Okay? And so when collections are done by the tribe, they tend to do duplicate collections, meaning, you know, you're at a plant, you're getting specimens. What they'll tend to do is get four different duplicate specimens of that site, and then one of those collections will go to the herbarium at Happy Camp, another one to Orleans. And another thing the tribe is doing that's very exciting is integrating laminated herbarium specimens into K through 12 education on the different food medicinal plants used by the Karuk tribe. And so by getting these duplicate specimens, you have some for purely scientific purposes, but others for educational purposes. And every specimen they collect, they have the Karuk name included as well as the Latin name. So what you have is also a strengthening of the cultural linguistic heritage of the Karuk tribe, because one of the strongest areas of language retention is the names people have for different species of plants, animals. So sure. It's really, really, really powerful. So there's the scientific, there's the K through 12 education, there's the cultural, linguistic, parts. So all these are tremendous benefits.
We're talking to Dr. Tom Carlson about the creation of herbaria by the Karuk tribe. He's been assisting. He works at UC Berkeley as a teaching professor of integrative biology and curator of ethnobotany at the university and Jepson Herbaria there in Berkeley. We now have with us, after phone problems got worked out, Leif Hillman, who's the director of the Karuk Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Policy. Welcome, Leif.
Good morning.
And Lisa Hillman's with us as well, the food security coordinator for the Karuk tribe. Welcome, Lisa.
Yodwa, welcome to all of you to listening a little bit about our herbaria project.
So, Leif, start us off. What were the general goals, and how did the collaboration with UC Berkeley come about?
Well, it's part of a larger food security project that was that is a multi-state, multi-tribal project that's focused on the Klamath Basin. You have the Klamath Basin begins in the state of Oregon and flows into California and into the Pacific Ocean. And throughout that Klamath Basin, so on both sides of the state border, we also have a number of Indian tribes on in Oregon and in California. The three largest Indian tribes in the state of California, the Yurok, Karuk and Hoopa are in the Klamath Basin, and then in the upper Klamath, you have the largest Indian tribe in the state of Oregon, which is the Klamath tribes located at the headwaters. And so this project really seeks to look at the food systems and the native food systems and evaluate those food systems and look at ways to revitalize those food systems. So this herbarium project is one component of a pretty complex project that we have a lot of collaborators in academic circles as well, and UC Berkeley is certainly one of our one of those institutions, and in fact the serves as the lead on this multi-stakeholder project.
Lisa Hillman, how much of the tribe's diet, how much of the tribe's food system is based upon traditional plants? I mean, is it an attempt to go back that way, or is it largely there already?
Well, the thing is, so our tribe is spread across a large territory. So, you know, when we talk about the tribe, we're talking about probably three to four sort of central population areas, spread over a span of, you know, 110 miles of the river. And they, each one of these service areas has very different access to conventional foods. So let's say if we're talking about those tribal members located in Wairika, they have access to grocery stores and have less connection to the so the resources that are lower down the Klamath River in Happy Camp and in Orleans. Now, Orleans is the smallest of these larger service areas and is the very most remote, so 2 hours at least to the largest grocery store one way. So in this area, we rely heavily on native foods. And it also is an important economic, so as well as a spiritual and cultural preservation act to garner these foods. More people that understand about them and also how to manage for them properly, so the better off we all will be.
We're talking about the Karuk Tribal Herbaria with Lisa Hillman, Leif Hillman, and Tom Carlson here on the Jefferson Exchange. Lisa, Tom had mentioned before you got on about the food security grant. Who did it come from and what is it meant to do?
The food security grant is funded through the USDA. It's a research grant, agriculture food research grant that was it really had a lot of stipulations on it and was very large scale. So having all of these different organizations and entities was key to our being awarded that grant. And that was so roughly 4 years ago when the grant was awarded for a 5-year project. So we're at the very end of it, the last year, and you know, a lot of those goals, those lofty goals that we had, actually, in fact, grew in scope, and we're achieving them. It feels really good. We feel like we're making a great progress towards achieving our ultimate goal of attaining a more food secure area for these all of the communities around here. So not only native, also the non-native local communities who are really one of the poorest in the nation, these communities here.
So how then will the knowledge be used from this point forward? Are we talking about using the knowledge that is contained in the herbaria to be able to go out and find things as gatherers? Are we talking about agriculture, some combination thereof?
Well, so there's a lot of different ways that we can use this information, and I say this is one of the real beauties of it. It represents participatory action, so citizen science, people going out, learning how to identify native plants, so learning how to use those plants based on our voucher specimens, which is a pressed specimen. We have, Tom noted, there's three different names on there. I would like to point out with the Karuk name, that tells us a lot about the plant. Embedded in the name are often key information about how to use them or where it's located. And we also attached, and this is one of the things that's so unique about our herbaria, we attach references to oral histories. So people can recognize, oh, here we have what's commonly called the Indian potato. And this is in this, you know, name for Indian potato. So maybe it's Pufich Thais, because there are several different types. So this is the deer, many deer, many ones is the Thais part, and the deer is embedded in there. So we know also about the stories that connect to that, and also the cultural significance of the potato flower for the young woman's coming of age ceremony, and how that flower also represents her duties, her gender role as being a provider and making sure that you know, her people are well nourished. So we have so many different aspects of this this herbaria project that will go into the future. And one of the main things I think, not only is you know, having that that information available to the classes, so being able to bring in these dried specimens so the children can look at them, so can learn about them before going out into the field and engaging in the experiential learning, which is such a major point of traditional ecological knowledge, is learning by being with the plants themselves.
A whole wealth of information to be contained in the Cutter Tribal Herbaria, which are going to be in are in Happy Camp in Orleans. Leif Hillman and Lisa Hillman are with the tribe. Dr. Tom Carlson's from UC Berkeley, the curator of ethnobotany. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.